tendrils, and the thicker bone-like netting of bramble under that did not give as I stomped on it. I took a deep breath and reached my gauntleted hands in. For as long as I'd known anything, I'd been taught to be scared of bramble. Do not touch it. Destroy it with fire. Chip it off the nooks and crannies of a building with long-handled tools and thick leather gloves. The burn teams destroyed it with fire and then axes. But if I lit a fire in the night, people would come running. It would sear my mother and father with sap or burn them up. So I had to break through it myself. My metal fingers gripped bramble. My arms shoved deep into the killing branches. And then I triggered the gloves and ripped bramble apart by the fistful, careful to keep hold of the pieces and toss them to the side so they didn't fall down. Bramble pods burst and filled the air around me. Sap hissed and burned at my forearms and gloves, but it didn't burn through the metal or through the leathered joints underneath. With each ripped-out handful, I had to stop to crank the levers on my forearms to prime the gauntlets. It was slow work, but handful by handful, a sizzling pile of curled bramble grew next to me. I clawed until my fingers felt like they would crack. Sweat spilled from my pores, soaking the armor's padding. But I'd become a badger dog, digging and clawing with a single-minded ferocity that took me over. The acrid, oily smell of bramble sap filled my helmet, choking me. Even in my armor, I wasn't fully protected from everything the bramble could do to me. A loud snap startled me, and my right forearm blazed with pain as blood trickled down toward my fingers. "No," I hissed. The clockwork Milaka and I had built, broken, and no longer able to help drive 10 times my own strength to my hands, dug into the skin of my arm. I looked up at the stars and swore at whatever watching gods looked at me. "I do not know if I am on the right path, but I will not stop." I ignored the pain and began to dig with only my left arm, pumping the lever as fast as I could to make up for the lost time. I ripped out more desperate handfuls and threw them out onto the field. "Mother!" I screamed down at the bone-white bramble. "Father! Hear me!" The left arm's clockwork snapped, and I screamed as blood trickled down my arm. I leaned back on my legs, eyes closed. I couldn't stop. I couldn't go back to try to fix it. There was no time. Savar might be discovered. I couldn't fix the suit here. I screamed at the bramble and raised my hands high in the air and struck the bramble hard, then pulled. Without clockwork, my forearms strained and my back tore as I yanked with everything I had in me, every muscle that had been built over the long years of working metal, and I was rewarded by the satisfying sound of ripping bramble. I kicked, pulled, sobbed, and ripped the bramble out inch by inch, until a small hole grew in front of me, wide enough to put a ladder through, and just wide enough for me to shove and kick my way down through with a lantern. The moment my feet touched dirt, I spun around and removed my helmet. "Father, Mother, it's me. I've come for you." I raised the lantern with my other hand. They lay together, not having stirred, despite all the noise I'd made, screaming my way through the bramble. My hand shook, the light twisting about because of it, as I approached them. My father had his strong hands wrapped around my mother's waist as they curled together on the dirt. The last of their bread lay close next to an empty water skin. At first I thought the water had spilled around them. Then I realized why the dirt looked a different color. They'd given each other the mercy cut. I could see the knife held in both their hands, clasped together, the small, precise wounds on the forearms, their ashy faces, their closed eyes. They'd seen no other option. Their food had run out. They were trapped in bramble. I lay down, bereft. In the soft flicker I crawled over, rested my head carefully against my mother's side. and cried. 6. After my tears mingled with the blood on my parents' tunics, and once I could no longer find the energy for another single sob, I used a water skin to carefully wash their bodies. I wrapped them in fresh linen sheets, sweating inside my armor as I moved their still forms up the ladder and to the cart. I took my mother up first, her thin body no heavier than a sack of yams. My father still weighed more like a barrel of ingots. Bramble scratched at their skin on the way up through the sheets, but it didn't matter any more. I brushed the deadly threads away from my father's death wrappings with my dirty gauntlets. After digging in the ground, weeping, then preparing my mother's and father's bodies, the world above the pit had started to lighten. A rosy line of light glinted behind Kaim's buildings. Smoke rose from markets where vendors would be skewering meat and baking bread for morning workers. Lesser Kaim awoke.
"Identify yourself," a voice laced with cruel authority snapped.
One of the city guard, heavy and sweaty, his boots covered in mud and ash, pointed a poorly fashioned bronze spear at me. He flinched when I turned to look directly at him. The fearsome helmet's demonic faces unnerved him. I considered taking it off, but then that glinting spear point was only a foot away from my head.
"I am,"
I said, and faltered. What would I say next? Would I say I was Sophia, the daughter to Sedomil, the blacksmith, and Natasia, his wife? And what would he say then? What could he see through the glass-plated slits in my helmet? Was he even looking that closely? I lowered my voice and filled it with the same authority I would use on anyone at market, trying to cheat me out of the true weight of a copper ingot.
"I am Savar, son of the Duke Malabar's. What I do is my business. Get out of my way."
"My lord,"
the guard stammered.
I need you to come with me. There are many looking for you."
I grunted and moved my father's body up onto the cart, ignoring the city guardsman.
"Lord, you at least need to explain what is happening here."
"I need explain nothing to you," I growled at the man. "But if you insist..."
I was thinking furiously, sweating and nervous. He was going to figure out something was wrong. He was going to realize my voice was cracking inside the helmet. Surely he could hear that my accent was not velvet, even though I tried to imitate Savar's wheedling voice. But what could scare him off any more than a duke's son? A magister.
"Maybe," I said, my voice dropping, "you're interested in finding out more of what Magister Skax does in those rooms with blood grooves in the floor? Will you be coming with me?"
I pointed at the bodies. The guard swallowed and looked at the bundles under my parents' bodies.
"No." "Then leave me while I wait for the Magister. Better yet, run from here before I decide to tell him you have asked too many questions. Or do you want just your headless body to show up in the Sulong tomorrow?"
He fled, his feet kicking up ash. I waited until his figure disappeared between the farm shacks at the edge of the field, then picked up the cart and pulled it with me. Exhausted from digging, my head swirling with exhaustion, I stumbled more than ran. But no one bothered a noble in armor stumbling away from Lesser Kaim along Junpavati Road, pulling a small cart behind. Out on the road, only a few refugees approached the city from the hazy distance. I stopped, ignoring the bramble-choked trees that crept toward the road's edges, and quickly pulled a ragged patchwork cloak on over my armor. I hid the helmet under my parents' bodies. I didn't have time to pull the armor off, not with all the buckles and layers. The cloak would have to do. I used a butchering knife to cut my hair short, nastily and quickly. My cut hair drifted down to the dirt. I flung a small tarp over the cart and hung a few cups and spoons off the edge to clank against one another. I looked like any other refugee, or tinker, wandering the woods. Only this tinker kept glancing over a shoulder every 10 steps, and walked away from Kaim. I walked the entire day. I pulled the cart through mud and ruts. I struggled over grass knolls, swearing when my feet broke through small burrows in the ground. But in time, Kaim fell farther away. At the midday, as the sun hung high overhead and beat down on me, I trudged wearily through a tiny huddle of abandoned buildings that had once been a post station. I left the road for a hill far behind the stone tower, reasoning that I could use it as a landmark to find my way back to the road. Bramble covered the land, growing thicker on the ground as I left the cleared road behind me. The gnarled trees here succumbed to the grey, ropey fingers of it. Since man had fled here, bramble didn't grow as strongly as it did near the towns where it was fed by constant magic use. Out here in the wastes, only the distant effluvia of magic blowing in on the winds from afar gave it continuing sustenance. At the top of the hill, several miles from the tower, I found an open space of soft dirt. This would be a good place. A fine hill that my parents could see from the afterlife. A grave they would be proud of. I dug deep and laid my parents out in the broken dirt. In an hour the sun would set. I would spend the night here watching vigil over them. When morning broke, I would kiss the ground they lay in, weep one last time, and then leave all this behind me. We would all be at peace. I looked over at the cart and wondered what Borzai's price should be. The gold coins? The other leftover pieces of fine materials for the armor I'd packed away? As I mulled it over, the muffled thump of a churning drifted to the top of the hill. Horses. I ran around the cart. 3 men in city guard cloaks rode their way up the hill. The horses' legs glinted harshly in the setting sunlight, clad in metal and heavy leathers to protect against the low-lying bramble. Like a startled rabbit, I took a few steps left, then right, trying to think which direction I could bolt in. But then I looked back at my parents' graves. I stood frozen by the cart as the men thundered into the small grave space, their faces dark as they reined their horses in and leaped to the ground around me. I recognized Lucart, the sympathetic guard captain from earlier. He had a hand on his sword's hilt as he walked toward me.
"I'm here to take you back to Kaim," he said sadly.
"The gold coin," I said. "I did leave it for you, like I promised."
Lucart shook his head.
"Even a gold coin isn't enough to stay my hand when it comes to a lord's murdered son. They gave us horses to track you. There are more out on the roads. Malabar's himself paid the stables."
My eyes burned slightly, but I had cried too much over the last few days for anything to trickle out. I merely nodded. I felt somewhat relieved to realize it was all ending. "I will come. Just, please give me time to fill my parents' graves." But Lucart looked down at the ground and shook his head. He pointed at the graves.
"Fetch the bodies," he ordered the 2 younger guards.
They moved forward and I shouted, "No!"
"I'm sorry," Lucart said. "Malabar's ordered that your entire family be returned to him, regardless of your conditions."
I grabbed the helmet and my hammer from the cart and moved between my parents' graves.
"You will not desecrate the grave of my mother and father."
Not after all I had done.
"You desecrated the boy," Lucart said. "He will never find peace. The Lord demands his retribution."
"He should have lived a life better suited for the scales."
Lucart shrugged.
"True, but we are still here to take your family."
"You will not have my parents," I said firmly.
Lucart looked pained.
"I have no choice here. These are the Duke's orders."
"Piss on the Duke!" I shouted, startling them all.
But I was furious, desperate, and deep inside myself I begged for Lucart to see the obvious path my words beat toward. We're outside Kaim now. You can make any choices you want. Let us choose life. I was thinking back to the priest's words.
Bind her, Lucart ordered, his voice catching. Then we'll deal with the graves.
I looked at him, angry to see the sorrow in his eyes. You'll have to fight me first. I pulled the helmet on, buckling it in place with a single hand while stepping back even farther.
You're a girl, not a guard, Lucart said.
The two guards on either side of the graves pulled their swords and looked back at Lucart, wondering what to do next.
I am a girl wearing armor, I said. I shrugged my cloak off to fall by my shod feet. Your swords will struggle to pierce it, too. I'm a damned good craftsperson. I'm my father's daughter. My family's armor is well known for its reputation against a blade.
Lucart's lips curled with frustration.
Then we will bash you senseless in your armor.
You, maybe. I looked at the other two guards. But these two boys you have with you? They've barely held these swords for a full year. I have been swinging my own hammer since before I could walk. Look at their arms, Lucart. They have no rope on them. They were skinny little things, unaccustomed to hard work. Hell, they didn't even have calluses on their fingers. I raised my hammer. Lucart shook his head.
Get her,
he ordered, waving them forward. I did not wait for the nearest one to move at me. I ran for him. He raised a hand, thinking to block me, somewhat shocked at my presumption. I swung the hammer hard, and it clanged against steel as he struggled to bring the sword up, suddenly realizing his hand would do nothing against armor and a hammer. He punched at me, howling as his knuckles bounced off armor. I smacked him with a fist against the side of his head. It was as sure a hit as any. My arm tingled from the impact. Dazed, he stumbled back and grabbed at his ear, looking shocked to find blood flowing down to soak the collar of his tunic. Then he sat down and coughed, unable to keep to his feet.
Go now, I begged them all.
But the second guard came at me, grabbing me in a great hug as he tackled me from the side. We struck the soft dirt. Air huffed from between my lips. I rolled away from him and crouched on my hands and knees. As I drew in a long breath, the guard reared up, his sword held in two hands for strength, and struck my helmet with the butt of his sword. My head snapped, and I shut my eyes as the glass behind the slits in the helmet shattered. Shards dug at my neck as I stumbled to my feet, but the helmet had taken his strike and remained intact. He swung at me, the sword high over his head for another brutal strike. I walked into it, my head bowed and hammer still in my hand. He struck the helmet again. I struck his side. As the sword bounced off my helmet and shoulders, he crumpled, his ribs broken. Blood stained his garments, soaking the dirty gray material quickly, as I hadn't used the blunt side of the hammer. The tip had shattered his ribs and pierced deep between them. When I yanked the hammer away, flesh and fabric tore free.
Leave me be, I begged again.
Akash, Lucart shouted.
He ran at both of us, sword out. Any hesitation he had about fighting me had fled. There was nothing but rage in his movement. I'd hurt his fellow guardsmen. Behind him, one of the horses whinnied, panicked by the shouting. It yanked at the tether Lucart had staked to the ground, but as it tried to turn and move, it tripped in the leathers. It stumbled out into one of the many patches of bramble surrounding the hill. I wasn't going to be able to scare these men away, I realized, as the horse thrashed and screamed in the bramble. Lucart rushed me as the other guard wobbled to his feet, holding an unsteady sword in the air with one hand, his head with the other.
Malabar's orders this.
On his knees, the guard I'd hit stabbed at my feet with the sword as he wheezed the words. I turned back to him as he raised the point of his sword, trying to aim for one of the joints between my thigh plates and my hip. There was nothing but determination in his eyes. They would kill me if they had to, then drag all three of our bodies back to the Duke. I let the sword hit and work in, but it stopped as it hit the plates underneath. "Please stop," I begged yet again. Lucart loomed close. The both of them would overpower me at any second. I screamed and slammed the hammer between Akash's eyes as Lucart struck me, knocking me free of both his guard and the hammer. He hit the helmet with his sword twice, knocking my head about in it. Glass shards dug hard into my collarbone, and blood wet my shoulders. Lucart pinned me to the ground, using his weight to hold me in place as he pulled out a thin dagger.
"I've fought men in armor before," he hissed.
He was levering the tip of the dagger in between the joints under my arm. Metal creaked and scraped as the edge of the dagger pierced the chain slightly. Lucart pushed harder, his face red from the effort. The bite of metal stung as it broke my skin. Blood trickled down my armpit as I struggled to get free of him. I hit him with my other hand. One metal-gauntleted punch after another in his side as he kept trying to drive the dagger in farther. Each time I rocked in the dirt slightly. I could glimpse the graves of my parents each time. Then I was able to roll him. We tumbled right into my father's grave, the dip in the ground being just enough to separate our bodies as we fell into the shallow pit. Lucart howled as I drove my plated knee into his groin. I scrabbled out onto the dirt, a split second ahead of him. I was half standing, sprinting away as he struck me again. But I was hoping for it. I grabbed him and kept stumbling, letting him beat at me as I held us both together and ran us away from the dirt. He didn't understand why I didn't fight the dagger stabbing up under my arm again, or his punches. I was only worried about moving us both along in a spinning, spinning dance that he did not lead. And then his eyes focused not on me, but on the world whirling past. He oriented himself, tried to break free of me. I only crumpled with him in my arms. We struck the ground in our embrace, and Lucart flailed, trying to get back to his booted feet. It was too late. I rolled with him on bramble. I crushed strands and thready needles under my armor as I fell on my back. They stuck to Lucart as he flailed around with me. He shrieked when he pulled free of me, horror in his eyes. He yanked at bramble needles stuck to his skin and swept desperately at his cheeks and fingers. Then his eyes rolled up, and he stumbled forward. He swayed, then fell forward into the mat of bramble I'd thrown us both into, near the still body of the horse that had also fallen to the bramble's touch. I stood up unsteadily, terrified that bramble had poked through my broken helmet. Only a single needle hung limp on the edge of a slit that had once been glassed over, an inch from my eye. Ever so carefully, I undid the straps to the helmet and pulled it off, leaning forward so that any bramble attached to it would fall away from me. When I strode out of the bramble, helmet in my hands, the last guard dropped to his knees.
"Mercy," he said, and threw up. "I won't tell anyone."
"But you will, when the Magister spells it out of you," I said. I wrapped my gauntleted hands around his throat and squeezed until he could see me no more. "Mercy? There is no mercy in Kime." I dug more graves. One for Lucart, another for each of his fellow guards. I did that in armor, as the sun set orange over the plains in the distance. I put coin, which I could barely spare, in each of their hands for Borzai. We all made choices. They had chosen to follow Lords and Kime, even into death. But there had been some kindness far enough back that maybe Borzai held them in fine regard. I would not harm their afterlives, not even after what today had brought. This would be done right, because I wanted things to change from here. I stripped the armor off and buried it carefully for my mother and father to hold.
That was a price for a lord, a fit price, and one my parents could proudly present to the afterlife. For what would I do with it? Bring more blood to my hands? I wanted to make things, to hammer them out with my hands, tap designs out with my fingers. I wanted well-worn tools by my side. I'd spent a life working by my mother's and father's sides to learn these things. My hands knew them by instinct. I was not a killer, I swore it. I had been backed into a corner, turned into an animal by the true animals of Kime, the velvet ones. I was glad to see dirt cover that damned armor. When all were buried, I built a spell I'd learned as a mere child, long before the blue hung over all Kime, and the nobles died at the hands of the Magister. Paper and oils, and the scratch of symbols I barely understood. In the old days, before Bramble choked the land, we'd used this spell to light the forge fire quickly. I lit the paper with a fire strike, and threw it on the ground. I took the two remaining horses with me. I'd reloaded the cart's contents onto one of them, and I rode the other. They picked their way down the hill happily. With a horse, now only the Magister himself could fly overhead to catch me, and I doubted he would bother to hunt me down. There were bandits out on the roads, I'd been told, but I wore the boiled leather from the armor's underlayer. I had my strength, my mind, and my hammer looped in a belt by my side. Behind me, the top of the hill glowed, flashed, and sparked. A funeral pyre of magic flame burned, which made Bramble quiver. Vines of threaded stalks crept closer to the disturbed dirt I'd thrown the spell on, lacing themselves over the graves as I reached the road, and turned to put Kime to my back. When I found a village with need for a blacksmith, I would stop. Or maybe I would head all the way to Pika, where I knew they had need of blacksmiths to forge axe heads. And they might ask me where I came from. I would not say I came from the City of Blue. I would tell them I came from the City of Blood. And I would tell them to stay far from it.
This has been an Audible Studios production of The Tangled Lands. Written by Paolo Bacigalupi and Tobias S. Bakel. Performed by Tim Gerard Reynolds and Kate Redding. Executive producers Steve Feldberg and Mike Jarzik. Producer Chelsea Pita. Copyright 2010-2018 by Paolo Bacigalupi and Tobias S. Bakel. Sound recording copyright 2018 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.